Final score with the score. Dungarden 1, Chelsea 4. Chelsea win the first leg of the Conference League semi-final. Comprehensive victory in the end. Four really, really good goals. Great performance overall. And we're going to be talking about that today and a few other things. So welcome. And it'll be good to talk about the game. So, yeah, the game, just overall, much changed 11. A lot of starting players rested. Chelsea went 2-0 up in the first half. Jadon Sancho with a great goal from Enzo Fernandez pass. And then Nonny Madueke again from an Enzo Fernandez pass. And we were 2-0 up at half-time and quite comfortable. Some big changes at half-time. Caicedo, Palmer, Jackson all came on. And Trev as well. And they got another two goals. Jackson with one really, really good goal. Great finish. And also the other goal from a Palmer pass. Nice assist for him. And yeah, that was it. 4-0. Then conceded a sloppy goal, of course, which we always do. But saw out the win. Comprehensive win. We're pretty much almost certain to get to the final now. And we're really, really pleased with that. So I'm joined, as always, by Rambles. I thought I added him, but I hadn't. Rambles. And I see BTNT's here and a few other people, so we'll have you up later. But Rambles, welcome.
Evening, guys. Hope you're all well.
And what are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, a solid performance. It was always going to be tricky. I mean, that pitch was absolutely dreadful. And, you know, even their own players said how awful the pitch is. I mean, so that tells you it was going to be... Luckily, we managed to get through the game with no injuries, because that was the one concern I had before the game.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was a lot of people's concerns, and the pitch was a bit, you know, not great. And you can see that almost straight away in the first half. I mean, to get four goals in that game on that pitch is really good. And there were some good goals there as well.
There were some very good goals. Nonny's goal was very good. Jackson's second goal was very good.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those two. They're my favourite ones too. Yeah, and Enzo Fernandez getting on the assists again. He's now got 13 assists this season, Enzo Fernandez, as well as 6 goals. 19 goal contributions this season for Enzo Fernandez. That's
one thing I think goes unnoticed. I mean, Enzo Maresca's really improved Enzo Fernandez of the season.
Yes, that's right. I absolutely agree with that. People talk about how, you know, Palmer's not playing well, but Enzo Fernandez has definitely got better under Enzo Maresca. That's absolutely no doubt about it. He's got the best out of him. And he's shown up, you know, he's been a leader. He's scored important goals in big games, and when we've needed them, he's created important goals. You know, he's turned up, and full credit to him. You know, he was great. Only on for one half, but he made a huge difference today, and I was really pleased with him again, as always. Yeah, absolutely. And
I think going back to what you said about Palmer, I think he. In a way, I think it's a shame that we've got the Club World Cup, because I think he could just do with a couple of months off just to kind of like recharge the batteries and, you know, come back and, you know, next season ready to go again. Because I think he probably has been overplayed, and I don't think it was a major issue. I just think he's just lacking that spark and lacking that confidence. Yeah. And maybe like a summer break would just do him the world of good.
I mean, aren't winning games without him scoring as well? I think we're winning games without him. So, you know, it's even in the Premier League, we're winning games without him scoring. So it's learning to cope without him isn't a bad thing necessarily, but it'd be good to get his confidence back. His body language just doesn't look good right now. Something's not right, and nobody really knows what it is. At least nobody's talking about it. So,
I think a bit like Jackson, you know, Jackson got a bit of luck with his first goal tonight, then he scored the good second goal. I think sometimes you just need like a penalty or to get a rebound which comes off a part of the body and just goes in, and that just lifts the confidence.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson got his first goal for ages at the weekend, and now he got two today, didn't he? So that's, yeah, I mean, he's in form, which is really good. But yeah, like that, he's an example of that. He hadn't scored for months. Then he gets three in two games. You know, I mean, that's how it happens, isn't it? I think Jackson just needs that one goal just to get his confidence back. And yeah, because I never felt he was a confidence player. I just thought he just had total faith in himself, and he always looked like he did. But it looks like he's lost a little bit of confidence. Yeah, I don't know. I can't. That's Maresca's job to figure out what that is. And yeah, that's Maresca's job. But good performance overall. Nice to get another win. We're probably in the final now, which is good. We can rest a few players next week in the second leg, which is a really big positive. Another positive for Chelsea tonight is the Brentford one, by the way, in the Premier League. They beat Nottingham Forest. So Nottingham Forest are now 11 on points with us on the same number of games. And we have a better goal difference. So that's a positive for Chelsea tonight as well. Yes, so a good night for Chelsea overall. And we're going to get to your rant and rave in a minute. Well, it's a rave tonight. I know it is. But first, I just want to make sure that everyone checks out the Chelsea Echo Twitter account. Really good account. Lots of great content. Really worth a follow. This show is always on there. Like, if you want to get to the show earlier than anybody else, it's already on there. So yeah, give it a follow, 100%. So, Rambles, who is your rave tonight? I know it's a rave.
Yeah, it's going to be Nonny. I've been really impressed in the last few weeks. I think he's really stepped up his game. And we saw at the weekend him playing on the left-hand side. And we saw at the weekend he was using his right foot more. And I'd say a few weeks ago, there was a lot of talk about the wingers who could be sold. And Nonny's name was one of those names that was mentioned. You know, he could possibly be sold. Yeah. He was someone fans were saying I'd maybe look to sell. But I think he's really establishing himself now as a really good squad player and someone I'm excited about what's to come next season. You know, he's improving and there's parts of his game which are better than I thought they were, you know, but I don't think anyone thought he was that good in his right foot, but on Saturday against Everton, he showed actually he is improving on his right foot and he is actually good on the left. So we're now seeing, hang on, he can play left or right, which is a real bonus.
He's really improved this season. 11 goals and 5 assists now this season in all competitions. Nonny Madueke. He's actually our second highest scorer. He won until Jackson got his two goals. Palmer's our top scorer, and then Jackson, and then Nonny.
And I think he's only 22, Nonny, as well. I think
he's very young, yeah.
I think it's easy to forget how young he was when he signed, you know, but because he's been here quite a while, you could possibly think he was a few years older than he actually is.
Yeah, I'm not sure how old he is, actually. Should check that out. But I think he's 23 because he joined us when he was 21. I could be wrong. How old is he? Yeah, he's 23. Yeah, he's 23. He just turned 23 a couple of months ago. So, yeah, still very young though. Still got a lot of time ahead of him. And yeah, if he keeps improving, you know, that'd be really good for Chelsea. And he's a goal threat. He's absolutely a goal threat. And you know, and he gets in our first choice 11, 100% at the moment. So, yeah, really pleased with him. And he's showing up when we need him because we need to score goals. And he's been scoring goals when, you know, Palmer maybe hasn't been scoring as many. He's showed up and scored a few goals. So that's a really positive thing. I'm really pleased with him tonight. And, hopefully he starts on Sunday against Liverpool. But a really good performance. I think there's somebody else I want to talk to about tonight as well, who is Jadon Sancho. Now, a few weeks ago, everyone was talking about Jadon Sancho being like, well, just let him go back. He's not doing anything. Well, in his last six games, he's got 2 goals and 3 assists. He's now got 4 goals and 10 assists in 35 games this season. He's actually really started to turn it on in the last few weeks. And that's something I wanted to ask. Like, has he changed your mind about him? Do you think we should keep him now?
If you'd asked me that a month ago, I probably would have said let him go, and you know, we'll pay the $5 million. But the more I see him, the more I'm thinking, hang on, I think he would be good to have in the squad next season. And I think another thing which goes unnoticed, he's actually working hard for the team now. He tracks back. Now, I think there's been a lot of question marks about his attitude, obviously because of what went on at United. And he did have a period of time with us where he was struggling.
Mm. Yes, he did. And, you know, even I was getting to the point where I was like, we should send him back. And I'm a massive fan of Jadon Sancho. But for the last 6 weeks, I think, you know, he's important goals. That equaliser against Ipswich, that was a big goal. I mean, it's a great goal as well. Tonight was an important goal, the first goal, you know, and he's got some good assists as well. So he's contributing, which is in the running when you really need him to, which is what you want from players. So I would be happy to keep him. And like next, I mean, like 2026, you got Quenda coming in on the left, and maybe then you could sell him and you'd probably make a profit if we bought him for 25 million.
And I also think bringing a striker next season will really help take some of our wingers up a level. Because I think, you know, that's been a big...
Yeah, I agree. So I said, the likes of Neto and Sancho, who are kind of creating...
Yeah, I think they'll get a lot more assists if you bring in a Delap or a Sesko or a Jokeres or someone of that ilk.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. I think people have underrated Neto this season. He always thrives off having a proper striker in the box who can finish his crosses, you know, and we haven't had that this season, really. I mean, Jackson's not really a pure nine, traditional nine, and also he's been out for 2 months, and he had a bout of bad form as well. So we didn't really see any of those, you know, those kind of goals. But I think, you know, given a proper striker, he'll contribute a lot more.
And I also think bringing a striker will help raise Jackson's game. You know, he's had no real help or support in his time here.
Right.
All the pressure's been on him. And when he's not playing, we're going with like this false nine malarkey. And I just think bringing in that striker next season, you know, in games like tonight, whether we're in the Champions League or the Europa League and we're playing like a cup competition and we're playing, you know, weaker competition, we can field the second team, but the second team will be a few levels up from the second team we've got currently.
Yes, it will. And Nicholas Jackson will be in that. I mean, honestly, the goal he scored against Everton and the goal tonight, and the second goal tonight, really good strikes. They really were top class. I mean, the one tonight especially. Oh, he just hit it and it curled in like Galazzo, really.
I think he gets a really hard time, Jackson, because I see a lot of people say, oh, I'd sell him. But I think he must be in about 12, 13 goals in all competitions this season. And I think he got about 15 or 16 goals in all competitions last season. And I always say to people, if you sell Jackson, who are you going to get in to replace him? Because the striker market's not filled with top-class strikers.
No. I agree. I mean, I would keep Jackson. I don't know if he's like, you know, your number one starting striker if you want to win the Premier League, but he's definitely a good player to have in your squad. You know, if you want to rotate, if you're playing like 50, 60 games a season, he's definitely a player that can score goals. And I agree with you, he'll thrive on competition. I think like when he's got more pushing him, that pushes him to do better. And you know, when he's fighting through his place with other people and not having to do it all himself, that'll take a lot of pressure off him as well. And he can relax and enjoy his football a bit more. So, yeah, I absolutely agree on that. Now, Louis is here. We're going to be having, looks like we're going to be having somebody up soon to talk about the Chelsea women's team, who are champions for the sixth season in a row. That's coming soon later in the show. But here we have Louis. Welcome. And what are your thoughts on the game?
Hello, gents.
Evening,
Louis. Evening. Thanks, Alan. Thanks to see you. Well, first things first, I want to say, before we get into anything, regards to the family of Paul Lagan, absolutely fantastic Chelsea journalist, who, speaking of the women's team, you know, was there from the beginning covering the women's team and kind of opened the door for some amazing people to come and do some work and obviously cover the men's team as well. And also, funnily enough, covered a couple of Imperial Wharf games. So, you know, he's he was a lovely guy. Yes, and, you know, hope tonight's win was for him. Big, big performance by Chelsea. I think some of the biggest issues that have been facing the side over the past sort of 3-4 months have definitely been, great at holding on the ball, holding onto the ball, but not great at putting the ball on the back of the net. And today was a different case. You were just talking about Nico Jackson, obviously. Absolutely fantastic finishes by him. That second goal was spectacular. And, you know, I do think he would definitely thrive off having somebody come into the side. But, you know, I'm disappointed with the goal we conceded.
Yeah.
That's me really. I'm clutching at straws there a little bit, and I know that. But, you know, Chelsea are in a strong position to hopefully go all the way to the final now and really make a difference.
Yeah, and actually echo what you said earlier. Yeah, we all miss him. It's very sad. I'd seen a bit of him around and I'd seen him on documentaries about the Chelsea women as well. Really good guy. I even saw some of the Chelsea women players talking about him today, and Kieran Balogun and everyone. Everyone was out in force, and today's win is definitely for him. And of course, everyone at the Echo sends their deepest sympathies and condolences to his family. 100%, Louis. I agree about the performance. It was nice, wasn't it, to actually put some good goals in. You know, the Nonny goal and the Jackson goal were great, really great finishes. But Enzo Fernandez, we should talk about Enzo Fernandez. I think we talked about it briefly earlier, but Louis, he's got 13 assists this season now, as well as 6 goals in all competitions. He's closing in on 20 goal contributions this season. How well has he been doing that? And do you think that, and how well has Maresca used him?
He's been going about his business quite quietly, hasn't he? I think is the best way to describe it. He's not sort of a player which I think people would look at front and centre. And I think if he was comparing to a player in a team, obviously I'm not saying that we're anywhere near the calibre, but it feels a little bit like an early Modric or Toni Kroos. You know, those players just, you know, when they found their feet at Real Madrid, no one really sort of saw the player they could become and how important they were. And then obviously eventually they got their plaudits. I'm not comparing us to Real Madrid in the slightest, or comparing to those players, by the way, because that's a very, 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 very steep comparison to make. And I wouldn't want to, you know, put him in that camp yet, because he's definitely not anywhere near that yet. But he's been somebody who has, you know, been finding his feet this season, has been getting better and better and better. I think he definitely fits the mold of an Enzo Maresca player. I'd personally love to see him get more of the ball, if I'm being very honest. I think, you know, a player of that quality on the ball, like I said, already nearly 20 goal contributions. This is where I go a little bit, a little bit old school, probably, where I kind of look at it and go, well, if you've got a player who's that good on the ball, why are our centre backs seeing most of it? Let's get it into midfield. Let's get it to this guy. Let's get him to start creating more and more and more and more, and really be the person who can change the game. That, like we saw when he first arrived at Chelsea, you know, he was a real pivotal difference in what was a pretty lacklustre second half of the 22-23 season. So, you know, it's great to see him finding his feet and continually getting better, and, you know, long may it continue. And the score has died.
He's gone.
Is he there? He's completely gone. He's on mute.
I'm here. I was just saying.
We can hear you.
No, I'm really pleased about Enzo, because I've always been a big fan of Enzo Fernandez, and I love his attitude and his work ethic. And, you know, we haven't got many leaders, but he does show up. You know, he does put the shift in. He's vocal. You know, he scored important goals when we've needed them. We've not been playing well or needed a win. The Spurs game, you know, he basically won us the Spurs game with that goal. And I'm really pleased that he's at Chelsea, and I hope he stays for a while. And yeah, obviously you can't compare anyone to Modric. I mean, like, we know how good Modric is, but he's only 24, I think, Enzo, 23, 24.
He is 24.
Yeah, so his peak years are ahead of him. So hopefully that can continue into next season, and you can keep that level of performance and improvement going. Now, Rob is here.
Roberto!
He's a journalist and does a lot of work around Chelsea women and writing around Chelsea women, and also was also knew very well the journalist Paul Langan. He knew Paul quite well and spoke a lot about him today. So I'm just trying to add him at the moment. It's not quite working yet, but I'll get him up. And we'll get him to talk about Paul for a bit, and then also obviously talk about the Chelsea women. And while he's coming up, I just want to talk about the voice note review. Lou will be doing that. That'll be out later tonight on all podcast platforms. Always good fun, especially after a win. So make sure you go and check that out later tonight. Rob, welcome. It's good to have you here. Just first, your thoughts on and some thoughts about Paul Langan.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I could start by discussing Paul. It's one of those things, it always comes as a shock when you hear something like this, because as of a few, you know, just about a month ago, I remember seeing him at one of the games. I was with my partner at the time and sort of said hello and asked me who that was. And I sort of, afterwards, I said jokingly, oh, that's Paul. And, you know, for your case, Annie, and if you ever sort of basically wanted to know who sort of talks about Chelsea more than me, he's probably one of the few people that falls into that category. I was immensely pleased a few years ago when Chelsea did the women's documentary that they lent on Paul's knowledge, because quite frankly, there are few people who actually have the privilege to be able to say they were with Chelsea FC women from the very beginning. Now, I was someone who joined sort of fairly early on in the list, but moreover than that, he was there from the very beginning, you know, the away games where Chelsea were losing at Wheatsheaf Park against Brentford. You know, London is 8-0 in the cup. And, you know, from the very first days when Emma Hayes first had a staff on board, he is someone who genuinely could say he was there from when they were at the bottom and saw them rise to the very top. And I think it speaks volumes that today when I posted about it and obviously shared the rest of these, A, the number of people sort of responding to it, but B, also the fact Aaron Cuthbert was among those responding. And I know, you know, a lot of the players who had been there for a long time and had been there for a long time, and some of the Lionesses as well, because he was very passionate about covering England and England women too. You know, it is something that they very much are aware of and they all want to pay their respects. And I'm glad to say the club will be honouring it in the forthcoming for a very great man. And someone who, you know, I'll be completely honest, is one of the reasons why I myself have chosen to get into sort of more journalism sort of content and cover the women's team more, because he made it accessible and available. And yeah, his content on it is immense. So someone who will be severely, severely missed from the Chelsea family.
Thank you for that tribute, Rob. That's very, very beautiful. I think all of us would echo that as well. And I remember seeing him in that documentary, and he was one of the highlights of that documentary for me, because of the amount of information and knowledge he had, and just because of how passionate he was. So yeah, he will be very much missed. On another note, Chelsea women won their sixth successive Women's Premier League last night, which I watched, and it was really nice to watch. And I'm sure that he would have loved that too. Paul would have loved that moment. But it's quite an incredible period of dominance for Chelsea women. It's our sixth successive title. Now we haven't quite done it in Europe yet, but. Although we've got to a lot of semi-finals and a final, but there's a lot of dominance happening in the league, and that's a lot of that is the credit to Paul Green and also to Emma and also now Sonia as well, who've all been brilliant, and the players of course. But you're more of an expert on this than any of us. So how has kind of this success, this level of sustained success, been achieved?
I mean, I think firstly it's worth pointing out that this year was meant to sort of be the great leveller for a lot of people. You know, people were coming into this, and certainly I came into it. I sort of said, look, I'll be surprised if Sonia Bonpastor wins the title this year, purely because she was coming from a different league, coming to a team that was very much, you know, the house that Emma Hayes built. And while she did build some incredible foundations, I think, you know, that's definitely something that needs to be, you know, acknowledged, that there is still that in the place. This was the year that, you know, other teams were meant to catch up. Arsenal last year were able to invest. They obviously brought in Mariona Caldente, who is a phenomenal footballer and, you know, has dragged them pretty much to the Champions League sort of final by her performances. Manchester City obviously went ahead and got Viviana Miedemeyer to add to the attack, but already has Bunny Shaw, Lauren Hemp, at the time Chloe Kelly, you know, young players star Alba Fagino, Mary Fowler. You have Manchester United, who went ahead and got Elizabeth Turland in, who was meant to be, and is, you know, to her credit, that proven WSL goal scorer, the sort of player that was going to, you know, come in and decide tight games. And they also, you know, finally trusted Fallon Tullis-Joyce with the goalkeeping spot. Again, I had various conversations about her last year, and one of my big debates and bones of contention last year was that I felt she was better than Mary Earps at the time. And sort of that was a, you know, intense set of conversations. But I do think that people sort of take Chelsea's success at times for granted a little bit in the women's game. You know, to do six titles, to do three titles in a row is special. To do four in a row is a dynasty. To do five in a row is domination. To do six in a row and potentially the number six being an unbeaten season in the WSL at this level, where you can get results like you saw yesterday of Aston Villa, you know, turning Arsenal over 5-2, with every team in the WSL, with the exception of maybe Crystal Palace, having the ability to take points off one another. And you see that by West Ham, you know, getting draws recently against Chelsea and sort of Manchester United getting sort of the games where Manchester City this year have been sort of under the cosh, the performances and the improvement that you get in the middle of the table. Like, I think people don't realise quite, obviously the Champions League is a massive frustration. You know, no one should pretend that Chelsea don't want to win the Champions League, and they do, and it will have stung, and it did sting the players, and I think, you know, the nature of the loss will sting the players. But at the same time, I think it's kind of, you've got to at the same time acknowledge what an incredible sort of situation they're in, where you're looking at that and they could go for an entire, you know, win an unbeaten domestic treble and you'll mark it as, yes, that was a satisfactory season, but it's not enough. The big thing I think about Chelsea women is that they now, this year was sort of the year of the adjustment. Next year, I think you're going to see more sustained further investment. Obviously, they spent money bringing in Naomi Girma and Kira Walsh. They have made it very, very clear to Sonia Bonpastol that there is more budget available this summer for more top signings. She already has some in mind, but also they are looking to do similar to what they did on the men's side, where they are looking at some of the younger players. Obviously, they had Viola Boerman out on loan this year, who they signed last year. They brought in Femke Liefting in January, who's viewed as one of the top, you know, future goalkeepers. You know, there are a number of names that they're looking at and a number of players. You know, Lily Johannes being one of the obvious sort of ones. There is a real, you know, battle for her this summer. They are among the teams that have shown interest in Eula Brandt, but I think she's probably going to go elsewhere. Like, they are looking to try and build that next step. And the big thing I think that's been sort of stated is that Chelsea women's side, there was very much a case of that they were set for success now, but what they want to be is they want to be success for the success in the future as well. And they recognise there's a lot of players in that dressing room that are coming towards the end of their careers. They will be older players, and you need to find the longer term solutions. And I think they're actually building that transition very, very well. And while yesterday wasn't by any means, you know, the most spectacular performance, and I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, a 1-0 win in a tight game is to be expected, I think people also don't forget the fact that Chelsea have done all of this in the last year without, you know, their top goal scorer and their, you know, their top striker in Sam Kerr. They spent a lot of the season without Lauren James, who is, you know, one of, if not the best player in the WSL and one of the top players worldwide. Since Christmas, they've been without Guro Wrighton, who is so, so good in big games and such a creative force. Katerina Macario has had injury issues and has been out of the team. You know, a lot of the time, Ryan Ramirez herself has had injury issues, and I think has played, you know, probably ended up being overplayed because of the fact they haven't had support. Mia Fischl's obviously only just recently recovered from her ACL injury. Like, Chelsea have had to adapt and had to really, you know, push and make changes. And you've seen things like, you know, Sandy Baltimore going in at sort of a left back. I don't think anyone really predicted that at the start of the season. Vika Kapteyn and the amount of minutes she's played this season and the amount of trust that Sonia Bonpastol has shown in her, despite her being so young, is something no one, I think, really expected. You know, the amount of minutes that you've seen Aggie Beaver-Jones playing this season, I don't think was necessarily on the cards. And I do just think that Chelsea are going to continue to get better and better under Sonia Bonpastol. This is very much, you know, not the end, it's very much the beginning. And I think there will be more heavy investment this summer. I think there'll be a real aim on the Champions League. Look, you know, that they know that they didn't perform this year in the Champions League and when it mattered. And I think that next year, obviously, with the format changing again, going to the Swiss style that we have in the men's game, that'll make it more interesting. That'll potentially lead to, you know, different sort of seeding groups. But Chelsea, well, they are stung by that, but at the same time, they know that they can still make this a really successful and special season. And to be the first team to go unbeaten in a 22 season WSL would be quite something, you know, quite special.
It really would. It really would. It's quite incredible how they've done that. And it's just been relentless. You know, you kind of just every game, you know, we're just not losing and winning a lot of games. And yeah, you're right about last night. It wasn't like the best performance, but it's what I call a champion's performance. You know, you don't play well, but you grind it out, you keep a clean sheet and you grab the win. And that's what we did. And it's what champions do. And yeah, it's really enjoyable to watch the women. They, you know, to have a team that really does do justice to the Chelsea shirt, and what Chelsea is all about and really represent the club really well. I mean, they're an example to the men's team, the men's team should just go and watch them and see how their attitude, their mentality, you know, everything, because that's what we need in the men's team as well.
What I do think it is massively missed, and I said this yesterday, is that as soon as Chelsea went 1-0 up in that game, there was never any doubt in my mind that they would end up not getting, you know, to be honest, not winning it. As soon as they went 1-0 up, you saw the way they switched on, and you saw the way they just simply did not allow Manchester United a proper chance in the remaining sort of few minutes, in the remaining sort of, you know, quarter of an hour or so. They managed it so, so well. And I think it's that quality and that ability. I mean, I joked to my friend Conley, because he's a United fan afterwards, you know, Chelsea went 1-0 up, and immediately you turned, you saw the bench, and they were bringing on Gura Wright, and then Katerina Macario and Micah Hamano. Like, it's three unbelievable level of substitutes there. It's not players that are going to drop the level at all. And I think it's having that squad depth and stuff is so important. One final thing I will sort of say is that if people haven't, and they should, if you haven't, buy a ticket for the final day, sell out Stamford Bridge and give them the acclaim that they deserve, because the chances are, A, it will be a fantastic atmosphere because you've got people at Blue Flags and, you know, the supporters group. B, I suspect, you know, by that point, both Chelsea and Liverpool have nothing to play for. Both of them do like to attack, especially Liverpool under Albert Whiteley. I think Chelsea will be determined to see the season off in style. C, you'll get to see a trophy lift, which, you know, is one of those things you don't get to see very often. And first ever time it's happened at Stamford Bridge, be part of the history. And, you know, as the final thing, if they finish it unbeaten, like, that is, again, you'll again be witnessing history. Because I'd be able to, doing it unbeaten, I'd be surprised if other teams achieve that in the future. I think this is one of those cases where it's a very, very special team in a very, very special moment. And I'm not sure you will see the like of it again next year in the WSL. Certainly, I think, because it gets more and more competitive, teams will eventually just start losing games and dropping points. And the fact that we've got, you know, two games to go in this stance is kind of bonkers.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. And yeah, I would highly recommend people go to that game. I've been to watch the women at Stamford Bridge before. It's a great atmosphere. And you get to see a trophy lift. And I've seen us lift trophies at Stamford Bridge before with the men. It's a great experience. So get yourself down there. I'm going to try and get myself down there as well. So thank you, Rob. Thanks for coming on. Just while you're here, just some thoughts on today, on the performance today.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, satisfactory away performance is a good summary. You know, obviously nice to get the sort of four goals, disappointing to concede a goal, but at least sort of one of those ones, we had that sort of mad 10 minutes, I suppose, after conceding, but I don't think we have a really fighting danger. Enzo Fernandez played very, very well. Their tactic of choosing not to mark him or press him at any point was a bold one. Don't really think it paid off. But I do think, yeah, generally Chelsea played quite well. Great to see young Reggie Walsh come on. He's a real talent. And again, no lack of confidence in the kids. Always good to see a Cobham player come through. Thought Ty George did well up front, actually, in the first half. He's really looking the part now more from a physical point of view. He's bulked up a lot in this first year, which is only going to help improve him. And yeah, I think generally you've got to be happy. No, you know, if we just had to be 3-goal lead going into the second leg, no injuries on the artificial pitch, chance to rotate, you know, a couple of goals to Jackson, which is good for his confidence. Nothing, you know, not much more I'd have said. Obviously annoying not to get a clean sheet, but it's sort of one of those sort of, it is one of those things, you know, at the end of the day, we kind of knew this was probably going to be a tie where if we got an early goal, we were probably going to take it away from them. We did just that. We went and did a professional performance and just got to finish the job next week at Stamford Bridge and then onto Rowclaw for the final.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we really should win this trophy. No excuses really not to win it. And yeah, thank you, Rob. Really great to have you on as always. Always welcome here. Always good to hear from you.
Pleasure as always, guys. Have a good evening.
Take care, Rob. Have a good one.
Yeah. So, Louis and Rambles, your thoughts on the women's team and their achievements?
Yeah, the women's team are just such a special team. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to Paul Green and Emma Hayes, who made the job a lot easier for Sonia Bonpastor.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that she laid, Emma deserves a lot of credit because she came here and had a couple of seasons where at least one season where we weren't very good, but was given time and to build something. And she really built us up from there to, you know, where we are now. And that legacy is what Sonia has taken up. I mean, like kind of Arne Slot coming in at Liverpool after Jurgen Klopp, really.
Yeah, Jurgen Klopp.
She's just carried it on. And Sonia is a great manager herself. She's won a lot of major trophies. I think she's won the Champions League as well. So she's a great coach in her own right. And she's done a great job. Yeah, it's good to see a Chelsea team winning championships as well, winning titles. So, Louis, what are your thoughts on the women? I don't know how much you watch of women, but just on the...
I don't watch much of the women's team, I'll be very honest. But it's not because I don't want to. It's because I just simply don't have enough time in my day. But from what I have seen and from, you know, what you guys have spoken to me about, obviously, over the season, you know, I completely agree. Sonia Bonpastor's done an absolutely fantastic job, immense job. You know, I think the slot clock comparison is fairly apt. She's come in, she's taken on the mantle of Emma Hayes, which, you know, they're big shoes to fill. Because obviously what Emma Hayes did for Chelsea over that extended period, you know, it speaks volumes about her as a person and obviously what she's done for the women's game and for Chelsea. And Sonia Bonpastor coming in and like Rob was saying, potentially getting an unbeaten season straight afterwards. I mean, what more can you say? And the fact that I am hearing, you know, him saying about, you know, yeah, domestic trophies are all well and good, but because the Champions League still eludes him, it's not been a good enough season. I just wish the men's side was just cutthroat, if I'm being very honest. Because if there's any model to follow, evidently, it seems to be Chelsea women. Hearing people not know who Ruud Gullit is and making no effort to learn about the DNA and the culture of Chelsea over the past 30 years versus what we're seeing about the women's team just sort of taking it in their stride and carrying on. I mean, you know, it's a big, big step in the right direction. And, no, it's an incredibly big moment for Chelsea last night to go six in a row. So fair play to them. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And, yeah, fantastic stuff. Good. I do highly recommend watching the women if you can. I think there is a highlight show. So, I think that's on, is that on BBC? I think it's on BBC. So you can check, there's a women's version of Match of the Day, I think. No, that's a fun. I've just seen this thing that Louis shared. Reggie Walsh, who got his debut tonight. Congratulations to him. I think he's 16, 15 or 16. He wasn't
16, 20th of October, 2008.
He wasn't born when JT slipped in Moscow.
Oh my God.
I was at a pub watching that game. It's one of my best.
I was in my front room. My dad, I was watching it with my dad, and obviously he had a load of friends over. One was a Man United fan and screamed in the face of, at that time, a 10-year-old boy after Manchester United beat Chelsea. It was hideous. And this kid was still a sperm cell. It's like, what is that all about? What is going on there? It's absolutely nuts. So he was only what, 6 months old or something? When Barcelona 09 happened?
Oh my god!
That's mad.
Like, god, what? That is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. We're old now, gentlemen. I mean, it's now a situation where I got told by one of my brother's friends. My brother's 15, right? I was told by a 15-year-old I had unk status. Apparently, I'm an uncle now. Yeah. Like, it's news to me because, you know,
I actually would say, in all seriousness, I'm an uncle, and it's one of the best things I've ever done. So, honestly.
Did you do anything in that situation? You know, you just kind of turned up and it happened. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, this is great. Yeah. Although, when I say it's...
You get to give them back at the end of the day, which is the best thing.
I'm not actually an uncle. Like, I'm the oldest sibling, so it's kind of a case of that. There's not something there. It's the unk status. Basically, they're basically just saying I'm old. That's their version of saying you're an old man now. Is it like as soon as you go past the 16 to 25 rail card, is that when you're like, that's it, it's game over? Like, you're into the twilight of your life at that point, right? It's all downhill from here. So, you know. The fact that Reggie Walsh has gone, by the way, I'm going to make my debut for Chelsea tonight. And by the way, with my first touch, I'm nearly going to score a banger. Oh, and by the way, I wasn't even born when John Terry slipped in Moscow. It's like, what the fuck is going on there? That's ridiculous.
I know. It's funny.
I hate it. I hate every minute of the score.
Well, yeah, I mean, technically, if I had a child at 16 and then they had a son at 16, he could be my grandson. So that's a bit scary.
That's fucking mad.
Yeah. Don't even go there.
Reggie Walsh, by the way, is the youngest player to play for Chelsea since 1967.
Wow. Actually, I saw a stat as well. Enzo Maresca has now given more academy debuts in a single season than any manager in Chelsea history. That is pretty amazing.
Football players are still shit.
But whatever you think of him, I respect him for that because Chelsea to win, you know, like not many managers do give academy players debut, but he's given. I mean, he didn't have to give Reggie Walsh a debut today, really, and he did. And like 16, you know, big day for him and his family. No matter what happens in his career now, he can say he played for Chelsea in the European semi-final, and he's got that in his locker. So well done to him.
Can we just discuss, right? Who looks at a baby in 2008? And goes, I'm going to call you Reginald. Like, yeah, seriously. That reinforces the point score, does it not?
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
You do associate it with an older person.
Do you reckon he was, like, born already with a pension?
Born?
I wonder if he's got a brother called Ronnie.
Oh, my God. If he does, that'd just make it be... Chef's kiss. Reggie and Ronnie. Oh my God. I mean, but yeah, I thought he came on, he looked really good. So, you know, we can say it's upright. Is it Djurgården?
Djurgården.
I
actually looked this up to see how to pronounce it. And now I can't find what I got for it.
I'm trying to find it.
You can go on while I find it.
I mean, I literally, whilst you were talking to Rob, I did the voice in that review, so it's done. It's going to be up literally in the next like 20 minutes. And, you know, I was literally looking at it. I was like, I'm not even going to bother trying to say the name purely because I don't want to butcher it. It's a situation where you look at it, it's like, oh God, I don't even want to try that because I feel like I'm going to, you know, disrespect, you know, IKEA and ABBA at the same time if I did that and got it wrong.
Okay, so where is it?
And John's sending like sad eye emojis because he's clearly not very happy with that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now. It's, there's a video.
Is it like Djurgården? I am from Sweden. It's like that, isn't it? Like, you know.
You have to give me a bit of time to find this out.
I've just got a Maresca quote on Reggie Walsh.
Oh, what did he say?
Oh, go on.
Maresca said Reggie Walsh is perfect for his system, but at 16 years old, needs to now focus on school and his exams.
Oh, man. It's your Gordon.
Your Gordon.
Your Gordon.
See, this is what I mean. This is exactly what I mean. See, this is why you don't want to say it wrong. It's like, you listen to the commentators constantly get player names wrong. And I'm like, how the fuck have you lot still got a job? Like, seriously, like, put the effort in. I know it's a bit rich from the man who's literally said he's not been able to say the name in a review, but I've only done that out of respect for the fact I simply couldn't say it. But now it's like, this is what I mean. The question's going to constantly be raised. I've got to learn it for next week now.
Absolutely. Yeah, you do. I'm going to test you.
Oh, fucking quality. Speaking of, by the way, right, there's something else I want to talk about before you wrap up, unless you've got something on your agenda, Scott. But I do think it's kind of quite fitting with the stuff with Reggie Walsh. Obviously, we've just spoken about the fact that Chelsea are in a position where, or were in a position when Reggie Walsh was born that he hadn't even seen John Terry slip, right? And there's moments of Chelsea history that, you know, he's not going to have seen to have had to live through and live that pain, right? I, for example, was not born to see Ruud Gullit be signed for Chelsea. However, what I will say is I was absolutely astounded and amazed by the complete disregard to Ruud Gullit's comments on the ownership in the overlap interview, where people said it's really not a big deal, that they don't know who he is 3 years on, by the way, and how important he was for Chelsea. I can't believe that. We're obviously sitting here talking about Reggie Walsh, right? And the things that we've had to go through watching Chelsea and how that's formulated our appreciation for the club, for the history, for where we are. And we're seeing people just think Ruud Gullit is some FIFA card and that's it. Like I completely don't understand how people can support this club or have supported this club for an extended period and just don't give a shit about anything pre 2000 and something, because without Ruud Gullit, without Glenn Hoddle, without Ken Bates in the early and late 90s, Chelsea wouldn't be in the position they are. And also, to be very honest, a lot of the people who do support Chelsea now probably wouldn't be supporting them, because we'd be absolute utter dog shit.
Well, I am old enough to remember when Ruud Gullit signed for Chelsea, and honestly, I remember I saw it on CFAX. If people remember what CFAX is, it was all.
Oh my god, I love CFAX. What a day that was. I love that.
CFAX, and even then I couldn't quite believe it. This is where Chelsea were at the time. It was like, Ruud Gullit was like world player of the year. He won the Ballon d'Or, right? He won like multiple European Cups leagues with AC Milan, won the Euros with Holland. Great player, like world class. Could play basically anywhere and be world class. And like we signed, and like we were signing one on free, and I was like, really? That can't be right. Like, and it was all over the papers and stuff. I was like, is this really happening? Like, you know, and then, yeah, you kind of look at it and then it is happening. It was unbelievable. We were all kind of in awe, and everyone was buying the dreadlock wigs and stuff and Gullit shirts and everything. And then the day they announced him, they also announced Mark Hughes. So that was unbelievable as well, because like our strikers at that point were Paul Furlong, John Spencer. I mean, I love John Spencer, by the way, cult hero of mine. John Spencer and Mark Steen, I think. And we hadn't had a 20 goal a season goal scorer for ages, and we hadn't signed anyone really kind of in that top tier for years. But that was the pull of Glenn Hoddle. And yeah, I mean, like, how can people not know about that era? I mean, we literally won two FA Cups, the Cup Winners' Cup, European Super Cup, and the League Cup between 97 and 2000 under Gullit first, and then under Viali.
This is what I mean. Like, go on, sorry, Scott. Yeah, I mean,
Gullit was the first Chelsea manager to win a trophy for 26 years. Not to mention the first black manager to win a major trophy in English football as well. In his first season at Chelsea. So, I mean, it's absolutely incredible that people don't know that. Like, he won us a trophy. He won the Ballon d'Or. Like, how can you not know who Ruud Gullit is? Like, even if you don't think he knew he played for Chelsea, you should know who he is. Like, this guy is...
No, but so my thing is, people know who he is, right? But they go, oh, you know, he's just a really great player. I'm like, you know, but you need to understand the... How important he was to Chelsea's history and put them on the trajectory to the point where they are now. and people are going, oh, we didn't support Chelsea because of Rude Hill. I'm like, no, you fucking did. You fucking did, because Chelsea wouldn't have been bought by Abramovich because they wouldn't be in the position they were in without Ruud Gullit arriving at the club, without Glenn Hoddle arriving at the club. And I strongly recommend, it's 45 minutes, guys. You can listen to it on your commute, right? I strongly recommend listening to The Blueprint, right? And I'm not just saying that because we're part of the same network and we worked on it and all that sort of stuff, right? It is genuinely one of the best pieces of narrative-driven stories and journalism to ever be used to be spoken about with Chelsea, ever, without fail. And there's a whole episode dedicated to why Ruud Gullit was so important and when he signed for Chelsea. Like Score saying, Chelsea did not sign those sort of players. Chelsea, if we're gonna put it in no uncertain terms, before Chelsea signed Ruud Gullit, if you were to liken it to Premier League signings in this current window, it's like the Brentford signings. Chelsea are signing Brentford players, basically. They're like, you know, all right, we were there, thereabouts. Ruud Gullit completely changed it. And he spoke about that on the overlap as well.
He changed everything. Glenn Hoddle was the first person to change it, really, because Glenn Hoddle was, you know, we all know who Glenn Hoddle is.
I was going to say, Ruud Gullit signing for Chelsea. JJ Kocher signing for Bolton.
Ruud Gullit signed for Chelsea because of Glenn Hoddle, basically.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary about this, but our training ground was so bad then, because we didn't have our own training ground. We trained at school playing fields at that point. And they took precedence over us on Wednesdays. our stadium was being rebuilt. So Hoddle was very clever. He didn't take Gullit to the stadium or the training ground when he was trying to convince him to join. He just said they're all being worked on, so he can't go there at the moment. Because he knew if he took them there...
He took it. he got him pissed so he would sign for Chelsea. That's the... he got him rat-arsed just so he put pen to paper on the deal. That's how... That's what's absolutely mental. Because honestly, and Chelsea trained at a place called, for people that know, Chelsea trained at Harlington, right? Which is currently used by Imperial College, the university, school fields. Imperial Wharf use it. My team use it. We're a Saturday and / Sunday league exhibition team. All due respect to my lads, and I absolutely love them, right? But we are shite in comparison to Ruud Gullit, right? Let's be very, very honest there, straight off the bat. This is what I mean, like the quality of player that he was and how important he was just to put Chelsea on the trajectory. And I'm sure the people that listen to the pod know who Ruud Gullit is and know how important he is because, you know, our audience, I'd like to hope, are fairly educated. If they're not, they'll go out and they'll go and look for it and they'll do their research. Because yeah, I would say if you guys don't know, like I said, that podcast, stick it on, have a listen. It's literally lays out all the history. In fact, you know what? If we talk about it a bit further, let me just find, I'm just going to link it to my Ruud Gullit tweet, and then that way everyone can just go and find it. But yeah, I'd say go listen to the pod and it will make your understanding of Chelsea far deeper. He's such a massive, massive person. Like, I'm not saying that people supported Chelsea just because of Ruud Gullit. Like, Ruud Gullit arrived and even if you weren't born, you're like, well, I support Chelsea now and I only support Chelsea because of Ruud Gullit. You might have fallen in love with the club for a different reason. It might have been, you know, Idrissa Johnson. It might have been God knows who. Like, you might have followed Isa del Horno when he came from, you know, Bilbao to Chelsea, right? And you might be Spanish for a minute, right? No, but that's what I mean. Like, these players wouldn't be Chelsea players without Ruud Gullit arriving at the club.
Correct.
And allowing Chelsea to build on that to get the quality where those people were coming through the door. Like that's how important he was to the entire history of this football club.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, it was a domino effect. You had Gullit who brought, sorry, you had Hoddle brought Gullit and Gullit brought in Viali, Zola, Di Matteo, Leboeuf. You know, all these players started to Poirier. They all joined because of him, right? And then that created the momentum. And then, like, Viali took on what Gullit had done and won even more. And then that team got kind of got old. But at that point, the Chelsea bandwagon was off. We were a big club again. People saw us as a big club again, so we were able to attract players like Frank Lampard for £11 million. And Odegaard Johnson and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. What a player he was. Oh, he's still my favourite Chelsea striker. And then that team got us into the Champions League, which meant that Roman Abramovich wanted to buy us. And the rest is history. So it was all like a cycle. It started with Glenn Hoddle and led to us being bought by Abramovich and all the success that we've had since. So it's pretty amazing, really, when you think about it. What a thing. And how do people not know who Ruud Gullit was? Chelsea manager. And I mean, Ruud Gullit was one of the best players I ever saw play for Chelsea. Honestly, he still gets into my all-time Chelsea 11. And basically, you could play him in any position. Didn't matter. You could play midfield, attack, wing, centre-back, sweeper. Apart from goal, any outfield position you could play, and he'd be world-class. If you want to see an example of how good he was, there's that Chelsea 5 Middlesbrough nil from the season that he was playing with us. The full game is on YouTube. Go and find it and just watch that game. It's brilliant football. We play football like Barcelona, but we had Gavin Peacock in our team and Paul Furlong, but we played amazing football. And it was all because of Gullit and Petrescu as well. Petrescu was brilliant in that game. Check that out, because that was still one of the best performances we put in over 90 minutes, and we won 5-0, and it's great to watch. Absolutely. God, how do people not know that?
Well, I just put the link to the show in the Jumbotron, so if people want to go and listen, me being passive aggressive saying I'll make your life easier is just a follow on from the tweet, because I'm still pissed off reading some of the comments, but it does stand. Your life's been made easy, so go and listen and understand your history. And if you want to learn more about it, once you've listened to it, you can drop any of us here a DM, because we will literally sit here and wax lyrical about it for hours on end.
Absolutely. I love talking about that period in Chelsea history.
Oh, it was an amazing period.
Yeah, I mean, we almost won the league as well. You know, if we were literally the treble winning team. We were
in 99, yeah, we were very close.
We were only 4 points behind them in the end. 4 points. And we only lost 3 matches in the league all season. It's unbelievable, really, when you think about it. That was a really great side. Didn't win anything that season, which is unbelievable. You know, we just, and of course our striker, Kazaragi, got a career-ending injury after only 9 games, which didn't help. So, again, all these season reviews are on YouTube, so make sure you go and check them out. But anyway. Enough nostalgia for a while. I do love the nostalgia. I could do a whole show on nostalgia. But this has been a good show. Good result today. Lovely to talk about the women and to talk about Paul as well. So just some final thoughts, rambles on today's game.
Yeah, I think it was a solid professional performance. And he was able to take some players at half time, and some players got the second half run out. And hopefully a few players well rested for Sunday's Liverpool visit.
Absolutely agree.
And hopefully Liverpool have been on the piss all week and they'll be on the beach Sunday.
Yep, let's hope so. Also, another good thing, I mean, Manchester United won tonight. That means that they'll likely be preparing for the Europa League final when they play us. I think it's only a few days before the final.
And Brentford beat Forest, which is a huge bonus.
Yes, so good stuff for Chelsea in the Champions League tonight as well. All good. Louis?
Reggie Walsh was not born when John Terry slipped. However, he made his debut tonight. La Cobham lives on through Reggie Walsh, the 818th player to pull on a Chelsea shirt, and the youngest since 1967. Vamos los Regios.
I love that. Vamos los Regios. You come up with the greatest nicknames. Fantastic. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being part of the show. Sorry we couldn't have more of you up today, but having Rob up was really, really great. We wanted to have that happen and talk about the women and winning the league. So that's why we didn't get any of you up today. But we'll be back after Liverpool on Sunday. hopefully we can get something from that game. And they're on the beach. And so join us then. Do make sure you catch the voice note review, which is coming out imminently.
10 minutes
on all podcast platforms. You can check that out. This show will be on podcast platforms tomorrow. Whatever podcast platform you listen to, it'll be on there. So give that a listen as well. Make sure you give the Chelsea Echo Twitter a follow enjoy that. So we'll see you on Sunday, and up the Chelsea.